Welcome to a brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Is I, once again, the Reverend Godfather of the show's main host and frontman. If it sounds like I'm coming down with a cold, good chance I am. And if you're listening to this prior to December 31st, 2019, I hope you will have a safe and wonderful New Year's Eve celebration. And if you so happen to partake in a lot of adult beverages, may you take a cab home and get home, not just a cab, an Uber or a Lyft home, and that way you're able to get home safely. If you need any type of, if you're feeling down and out, please seek help. We urge you to seek help. We understand and we know how it is this time of year in regards to mental health. So if that be the case, if you need help, seek help. You're not alone. You have friends, or you have support, at least support this time of year if needed. Seek that help. Seek that support if needed. So, but if you're listening to this after the new year, after December 31st, if you're listening to this in 2020, we hope you had a safe and wonderful New Year celebration. And Happy New Year to all of you. And we hope you had a wonderful holiday season. And if you want to tell us all about the fun and weird stuff that happened to you during this wonderful holiday season, if it was a wonderful holiday season for you, feel free to do so by sending us an email at longcoatmafia@gmail.com and let us know. Or leave a description down below and there's a good chance we'll read it on the air. We do have that policy in place to do that. So, to get to the point, in this week's episode was kind of a shot to the arm that I needed because I was feeling down and out. I was feeling the holiday blues myself. I was feeling kind of burnt out with the show. And you kind of hear with the interview at the start that there was a shout out by Dave himself, David Kerr, regards to promoting Bloody Summer Camp and to do interviews. So that doing the interview was kind of a shot to the arm. It was much needed shot to the arm. I feel better. I feel energized for the show. So let's get it on. Let's give a brief little prior introduction. So a side note, special thanks, special shout out to Matt Burns in regards to letting us know and letting us kind of highlight this shout out, or I should say this request that David Kerr kind of put out there, is that he wanted to speak to podcasters like ourselves to talk about Bloody Summer Camp. So in this kind of interview that was done with not just Dave Kerr, but his wife Amber, and one of the co-producers and actors in the film, Michael, came on Skype to kind of speak about not just Bloody Summer Camp, and everything surrounding it, but the other movies they did, acting, horror movies, general movies that they liked, and so forth and so on. We hope you enjoy this movie. Again, special thank you to David Kerr, his wife Amber, and Michael for being on the show for this interview. Links to their stuff will be in the description and everything else. Let's see, what else am I forgetting? Again, special shout out to Matt Burns for kind of highlighting David's post, because I think I was friends with David prior to the interview, but you know, I might have not seen it because of the stupid way Facebook does posts now. But either way, thank you, Matt, to kind of highlight that post and draw my attention to it. Thank you, David, Amber, and Michael, for being on the show. Let's get right down to it. Here is that interview, and I hope you all enjoy it. Okay, folks, we're back, and we're going to kind of get things rolling with a round of introductions, because to kind of explain things, Dave put out a call for podcasts for promotion, I guess, for his new movie that will be released sometime in the near couple of months or so. And when speaking with Dave, Dave pretty much said that there will be other guests on the show, not just him. So I believe a round of introductions is in order. So all of us could be kind of acquainted in some way. So my listeners know who I am, but please introduce yourselves.
My name is Dave Kerr. I'm actually the owner of Slasher 15 Productions. I'm the writer and director for the movies that I make. And this is Amber.
I'm Amber. I'm his wife. I'm a producer for the new movie that we have coming out called Bloody Summer Camp. I'm also a special effects makeup artist.
Hi, I'm Michael. I am an actor for Bloody Summer Camp, and I'm also a producer for Bloody Summer Camp as well.
Okay, let's pretty much start with that for right now. Would you all please describe Bloody Summer Camp for the audience at large in regards to this upcoming movie?
Sure. Yeah, Bloody Summer Camp is a throwback movie. It's an 80s summer camp slasher, in kind of inspired by Sleepaway Camp, The Burning, the original Friday the 13th. It takes place at a summer camp in 1986, where a bunch of counselors are getting the camp ready for the upcoming summer when a masked killer that has been dubbed Devil Face shows up and begins hacking up the counselors one by one.
Now, this is a crowd, in essence, for right now, a crowd-funded movie, in a way. Tell us, how has crowdfunding helped independent creators like yourself in regards to movies?
Well, actually, I mean, people, I'm not sure about everyone, but obviously people like me especially, I know, speaking for myself, I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for crowdfunding, because basically, you know, when we have an idea, we need someone to back it, someone to believe in it. And as far as all of our films, we rely solely on crowdfunding for these kinds of movies.
So, because we at the show are kind of scatterbrained, this is going to be back and forth. So please, I know it's going to be a little weird for you guys with the scatterbrained in regards to our show. What is the allure of being an independent filmmaker in regards to, this is what, your third movie that you're currently working, third movie?
Yes, third movie.
What is the, so far, what is the allure have you all feel in regards to independent movies that are out there, like yourselves?
As far as us, or as far as the contributors?
You guys, in regards to the audience, what have you seen that the allure coming from maybe fans and being independent creators?
Like, what is the benefit of being independent?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm not sure about I don't want to speak for them, but for me, I keep coming back to it because I enjoy doing it. And I always said that I feel like I have a chance to make something that I've been waiting myself to see. I've been kind of tired of the new age horror films that have been coming out, and I've been waiting around for certain movies to come out and them to make certain movies, and it never happens, and I'm always kind of disappointed. And so when I decided to make my first film, it was, I never intended on making a second one, but I enjoyed it so much and I learned so much along the way that I wanted to continue doing it. And that's when I started focusing on movies that I actually, you know, well, what would I want to see? What are people not doing that I would actually want to watch? And I think as far as the people who are crowdfunding us, the lure is that you don't have big studios messing up a script because they want to appease the audience. You don't have big studios taking Black Christmas and making it from R-rated to PG-13 just because they want more audience to go to theaters and seeing it.
And could you, I don't mean to interrupt, but
yeah.
Could the allure on the fan aspect, the chance of, I know I can't speak for you guys in regards to what you did for crowdfunding, but a chance to own maybe a poster or a prop or maybe a credit in the movie in a way.
Yeah, that is another one. We, in order to successfully be crowdfunded, we actually had to come up with some really creative perks, and these are things that people would not get if it wasn't for crowdfunding. We actually had, you could have a character named after you. You could have your picture featured in the film. You could actually die in the film. You know, we had all these as perks because, you know, at the end of the day, you got to do what you got to do to make the money.
On your end, has there been, with the aspect of crowdfunding, has there been any type of issues with it that you've had? Meaning, has there been one particular perk that you didn't expect to blow up, but it blew up in a way?
Parts in the movie. Everyone kept wanting, they really liked having a part in the movie, and you know, if we could have kept pushing them out, then we could have made quite a bit more money. But the thing is, at a certain point, it's a problem with the script where you can't really fit anyone else in without just, you know, throwing in a bunch of random deaths or a bunch of random people.
And you probably would lose sight of what the movie is all about. I understand. To kind of go back, yes, one thing I've said to my listeners, one thing I'm not afraid to do is let the folks I'm interviewing, especially when I'm doing independent creators, is to let them know what I think about what they've done. And prior to folks at home, I've done, you all know this, if you listened before, I did it with John Johnson and Darkstone, and I'm going to be doing it with Dave and his crew. Prior to this recording, and part of my research, I did watch Curse of Bloody Nurse, I think it was, on Amazon Prime. I did rent it. I hear the cringe. oh no, he watched it. yes, I watched this film. Yes, it's.
I'm sorry.
Why are you apologizing? Why are you apologizing?
It's kind of like looking back at a yearbook photo in high school, and you got that kind of really stupid hairdo, and you know.
I could ask, what did you, first of all, what did you learn from making this particular film?
Everything. When I started out doing Curse, it was basically, I'd seen so many, sci-fi movies, and had seen so many Amazon Prime movies where they're terrible, they're bad acting, everything's terrible in the film, and you look at it and they got like a couple $1 million budget or even sometimes more, and you wonder like, how do you have that and it turned out this bad? And so kind of like the whole start of it was, I'm pretty sure that I could make a horror movie with practically no budget, and it wouldn't be the worst movie you've ever seen. And now, I still stick by that. I don't think it's the worst movie anyone's ever seen.
I've seen worse. I enjoy independent films because they offer up something that sometimes the big creators don't do. I'm going to have to give you guys credit. There were a few things that I'm like, well, I know it's going to make me sound like a little bit of a sicko and everything else. It's just that when I see a horror flick and there's a kind of a, in a way, a beheading, there's no, it's like, wait a minute, where's the blood pressure? You just decapitated somebody. In this, you had a throat slitting scene and there was, in essence, blood pressure in a way. And I was like, well, that's kind of refreshing to see that the filmmaker, you guys, thought of at least that. And a lot of the other things that I did see in the film would be, or the issues were just primarily nitpicks. Yeah. I'll say it like that. It was an enjoyable film. It does make me want to kind of see the second film that you all made.
You should.
I promise. The second one is a lot better. There was a major bump up in everything. The budget was better. We got a great cameraman. You want to talk some good
practical effects. Watch number two.
Now, speaking of the second one, Dave, you said, I remember seeing online, you had some issues with Amazon not allowing it online. Yeah. Do you care to go, I'll ask it like this, do you care to go into that, or if not, yeah. I'll leave it be.
No, yeah, that's fine. I hadn't ran into this. When I put a curse on Amazon, you know, it had nudity and it had gore. It didn't have a lot of nudity, but, you know, it had nudity. It had gore, it had a torture scene in it. And it was put on Amazon Prime just fine. And so I had never even thought about there being a problem with this one. And I actually had cut out multiple deaths and two nude scenes in this edit versus what I have on the standard theatrical version, just to cut it down, because the second one was over 2 hours long. So when I went to put it on Amazon, I cut it down to an hour and a half or an hour and 37 minutes. So I'd already cut out two different nude scenes. I'd already cut out like a bunch of different deaths. And so I thought everything was going to be fine. I submitted it and they came back with a message and basically said it was too graphic in nature and there was too much nudity, that they would put it on Amazon Video. But there was no way that they were going to let me put it on Amazon Prime.
Now, were you familiar with what happened earlier this year in Amazon?
Were you talking about the other movie that had that happen?
Not so much other movie, but earlier this year.
Oh, yeah.
There was
cut out a bunch of titles.
Right. Do you think that they, from my research, it seemed like it was a lot of smaller creators like yourselves or like yourself that were seemingly targeted by Amazon saying, you know, we don't want this, we don't want this, and were giving various reasons.
Yeah, it's entirely possible because so many other people who had seen the film, I mean, there is a lot of nudity, there is a lot of gore, you know, I like to make sure people do know that. I mean, they weren't lying when they said it was very graphic, it had a lot of nudity, but there's a lot of people, there's like Hellraisers on there, you know, and like 50 Shades of Grey's on there, you know, there's
Hostile.
But you know, all these big budget movies, you know, I don't think they're any more graphic or you know, anything than our film is. The only thing that I know about what back when they pulled, I know I was told even by the person who distributes Curse/Nurse, he said that a bunch of his films actually got pulled off of Amazon. But, I mean, Curse is still on there, so I don't know.
Well, I think it's a lot of, I won't say the bigger studios in a way. It's one, maybe the bigger studios have a lot of pull. Yeah. As per independent creators, I think there are a few, I won't say bigger independent creators, but they have more of a catalog and view time. This is not a dig against you, but
oh yeah, I mean, I totally understand.
They have this bigger thing. They say, oh well, this creator has maybe 10-15 titles to their catalog and maybe a bunch of shorts. Since they have more of a watch time, let's leave them be. But here's this independent, I won't say a startup or a person that's trying to make a name for themselves. I don't mean that you guys are trying to be cocky or you're just trying to get the ball rolling and that they're going to be more picky towards someone like yourself instead of another independent creator like yourself that just happens to have a bigger catalog.
Oh, yeah. It's the same thing anywhere. They have a rule in place so they can use it when they want to use it.
Right.
But I actually thought about, at one point, I was considering editing the movie down even more to see if it would get on Prime. But then, I don't know if you saw anything about it. I posted about it. Right around that same time, Amazon released us a letter to everyone basically saying that they were cutting our pay for views down to practically nothing. It was like one penny for every 100 minutes of viewed. So, I mean, at that point, it wasn't even worth going through the trouble of editing return anymore, because it is on Amazon Video, so you can rent it for $2.
But well, that's what I did. I rented it for $2. You're probably getting a penny. So, yeah. but either way, at least you got a view from it. You got me looking at it. And to kind of pull things back around again, with Bloody Summer Camp, you managed to get, I don't want to say, as I was trying to tell somebody at my 9-to-5 the other day, that even though they might not be big names in major circles like Keanu Reeves or so forth and so on, but in indie circuits and smaller movie circles, they are big names. You managed to get Felissa Rose,
yeah,
part of Bloody Summer Camp. Can you tell us about how you managed to score Felissa, and go into a little bit, because that must have been exciting for you to get her.
Yeah, well, when we first started wanting to crowdfund the movie, one of the things that we promised that we would crowdfund for was a horror celebrity. And right around the time that we started to look like it was going to be possible that we were going to be able to make it work, Felissa was always my first choice. Because of us doing a camp slasher, I felt like she was probably the most iconic camp slasher that you could get from the 80s. And so I'd actually looked her up, and I actually wrote her through her her contact information on her website. And a couple months passed, and I hadn't heard anything. And I had started to look at other people. I looked into a couple other actors and talked to a couple of them as well. But then Felissa Rose actually, she hit me up right around the time that our crowdfunder was ending. And she said basically someone else runs her site for her. And she said sometimes it's not a very timely thing, but, you know, they do check all their emails. And she wrote me and she said that she loved the idea. She asked for like the outline of it, and I told her what we had in mind for the character, and she absolutely loved it. Said she wanted to be a part of it, and we got the ball rolling.
That's good. That's cool. That's good to hear. I'm sure it'll make a great kind of an Easter egg for a lot of the fans to know and see in the film when it finally gets put together and out there. I know you said you have a second round of crowdfunding coming in the next month or two in regards to Bloody Summer Camp.
We just released the date the other day, January 21st,
and
we'll be going back to filming in March. We had to kind of
you just went quiet for a moment, that's all.
Oh it must have cut out. But yeah, we're going to be doing it in January 21st, because we're actually going to start filming again in March when the weather gets nice again.
And okay, I just want to, I know, is Mike and the missus still there?
Yes.
Okay. Mike, can you tell us, I want to get them involved in this as well. I don't mean to be...
step out right quick, so go ahead and talk to them.
I'm here. I'm sorry. What was that again?
Mike, can you tell us about being an actor in the indie circuit, and how you feel about being this type of actor in a way?
Oh, honestly, I don't think I could find myself doing anything besides horror. I was just raised on horror. I absolutely adore horror. When I heard of, I mean, I'm actually one of those clear cut cases, actually, of, I was one of the people who did the GoFundMe to be a part of Bloody Summer Camp in the beginning. And, it was one of the best moves I could have made for myself. I got to meet, Dave and Amber, who are fantastic. The rest of the cast is beyond amazing. Felissa, oh, there is not enough things in the world I can say about her and how wonderful she is. Just such a sweetheart, so professional. I actually was her personal chauffeur to and from set while we were shooting. And honestly, her and I would just have some of the most fun conversations on the drive. Such a joy. Being on the circuit, it's great. I've been meeting a lot of great new people, and I got this great opportunity, and because of it now, I'm hoping to do future projects now with Dave and Amber as well, and they've brought me into the fold with all their friends and all the other people. Owen, our master of photography, he is absolutely amazing. And like I said, I mean, my social circle has grown rapidly. I've been meeting so many great people along the way.
How did you get started in acting, and what other have you done other roles in the past?
As far as movies, no, this is actually my first movie role. I did a lot of theater in high school and college, but that was about it. I really wanted to do this, and funny enough, I was watching Curse one night with my next door neighbor, and I was like, hey, this is actually not a bad movie, actually. And I was like, you know, it has its flaws, but man, That script is absolutely wonderful. It's like, that is so hysterical. There are so many fun moments in this. I'm a fan. And then sure, my neighbor goes, oh, I know that guy. Like, what do you mean you know that guy? He goes, yeah, he's a friend of mine. You want me to introduce him? I think he's doing a sequel. Maybe he can get you in there. And sure enough, I hit him up the very next day, and they're like, ah, sorry, we just wrapped up Return. But hey, you know, we would definitely be interested in talking to you when we do our next project. And sure enough, they were in touch with me. They said, hey, you know, if you want, you know, you can you can audition, or if you want to get a shoe in on this, you know, you can go check our GoFundMe. I went and I was like, ooh, well, I could be guaranteed to go play next to Felissa. Oh, I gotta do that. You know, I'm a big Superboy Camp fan. I love the Hatchet series, and she was in the fourth one, Victor Crawley.
She was in Hatchet? I didn't see anything about it in her IMDb. I got to go back and check.
Oh, yeah, she was in the fourth one called Victor Crawley.
Oh, the fourth one. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's actually pretty good, I have to admit. You know, it's like a new chapter in the story, but they do a good job, I have to admit.
I liked Hatchet 2 and 3. I thought the third one was kind of hysterical in a way. But, oh, yeah. Because it has a lot of funny moments in it. I don't... Again, I'm sounding like a sicko because I enjoy horror films. But still, sometimes a horror movie can be kind of funny. And Amber, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, how'd you get started in special effects? Were you just drafted? Well, I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, so I dabble in makeup a lot anyway, but when we did Curse and Return, I stepped in and started helping out. We had Kia Rains on Curse, and then on Return of the Slasher Nurse, it was me and Kia, and then we kind of just go from there. And then on Bloody Summer Camp, I'm lead on special effects, so I like blood and gore, and I like to figure out ways to do that, so...
So what have you learned in regards to getting your hands dirty in a way in special effects?
There's a lot of work in it. There's a lot of work in it, and it's definitely a lot of technical things that go into it.
Is there anything that you made your own in a way, or tried to do and found out later that there was an easier way to do it?
Oh, of course. Every damn thing I do. Well, I mean, I think it's always in the moment, you try to overcomplicate something, and then afterwards you're like, man, I should have just done it this way, and it probably would have worked a lot better, but it's a learning effect no matter what you're doing, so...
So I'm glad that you're enjoying yourself with it. Well, as many might say, there should be more women doing stuff like this. But I'm happy that you're doing this and that you are learning something new. And how do I put this properly? I'm grateful that you are part of making movies and contributing to everything else. And same thing with Mike. I won't say I have. Dave, are you still there, or did he wander off? Oh, Dave. Yeah. Okay. Dave, what have you learned in regards to over the past few years making movies?
Well, the first film I went into, it was the whole thing was a crash course. And I basically had to look up everything. I had to look up, you know, how do you do night scenes? You know, I had to, even though I had someone doing effects, I still, you know, I still had to make props. I still had to, you know, do camera work. I tried a lot. One of the biggest things I hated about the first film was I couldn't find a cinematographer that was willing to work with me because I, you know, it was my first film. So I actually did the camera work, and like I said, it was a crash course on working a camera, and that's why I hate the way the film is shot. And but through all of that, through all of the, I dealt with cast members dropping out, I dealt with people not showing up the day of, and through all of the stuff that went wrong in the first one, I learned how to work around it, how to do it right. Now I learned, okay, well, I should have did this, I should have did that. And so when I went and did the second film, the whole reason I wanted to do the second film was because I wanted to take what I learned and try to make a better film from that. And we got a cinematographer the second film, and like I said, I whenever cast members didn't show up or something, I've always been prepared. So, you know, everything that I know now, I learned through the process of making the first two films.
So was there a point that when you look back and said, all right, at this point I started with this, now I started with X, now I have Z, in a way. I mean, have you upgraded certain things in regards to when you started?
Yeah, everything's been upgraded. As far as like the equipment and even the actors, I know that's probably not part of the question, but you know, the first film we used, I used basically anyone that I could find. By the third film, I'm actually doing casting. I'm actually, you know, getting people who have been, you know, had acting lessons, have been in other films, and everything from every time I upgrade, do another movie, I want to upgrade something. We get more body mics, you know, we get better cameras, you know, every time we're like, how can we upgrade the equipment to make it better for the viewer?
From the other side of the table, so to speak, I can understand where you're coming from in a way. The fans of the show know that last year, or I should say earlier this year, but I filmed it last year, I was part of an indie film myself, and saw it behind the scenes, in a way, so I can understand what you're going through. I was pretty much, my experience working behind the scenes, I was grafted into a role, if you want to say it that way. Pretty much, it was going to be, I was going to be extra number 5, if you want to say that. Meaning that it was going to be like, okay, y'all could fight over which number extra you're going to be. And out of maybe about a dozen people that were going to show up, 3 people showed up for the acting that day. And the person that was putting everything together said, okay, there are going to be 3 roles. You 3 are now acting. I'm like, you do realize I have no acting experience whatsoever. And he was like, no problem. It's just going to be a few pages. I'm like, okay, I'll wing it. And I'll put it like this. Like I said, I was drafted into the role. And it was pretty much, we can't pay you, but you'll get an IMDb credit. I'm like, works for me. So, and it's just like, I get to be that person who goes, I'm in the movie, but your acting sucks. I don't care. Acting. But still, it was a fun experience doing it. And
yeah, and that you just described, that is like a normal day on an independent film. People don't show up, okay, well, then we're doing this, and let's keep rolling, you know. You just got to work with what you got.
And like I said, for me, it was just a fun experience. I personally didn't care how bad my acting was. And yes, folks, I am using air quotes for an audio podcast. So it is what it is, and yes, it was very, I did enjoy myself, and it just, to this day, it weirds me out that I'm part of something that's kind of big, and that I have this, like, offbeat credit to my name on IMDb, and it's just, like, really, just look at it, it's like, I have this part of, how many people, I don't brag about it, but it's like, how many people out there have, granted, many people have an acting credit, but still, it's like, there's 350, maybe million people in the United States, but it's like, I got an acting credit. You could say that to about yourself, Dave. It's like, wait a minute, not many people have a writing, producing, and, you know, directing credit. I do.
Yeah. And it's that's the thing about it. I don't think most people who are doing the kind of indie films that we do, you don't do it if it feels like work, because you put too much into it, and you're still doing, like, I'm still maintaining a 40-hour-a-week job. You know, we're doing this, I'm working with people, we're doing it on weekends and days off, and you don't do it because, you know, because it pays well. You do it because of what you're talking about, because you had fun doing it, you enjoy doing it. And one of the cool things about being in film is when you can do stuff like what happened with you, where you actually get to see how much, like, people appreciate when you let them be a part of something. Because, you know, to you, to me, I'm just like, well, I need someone to fill a role. And you ask someone else and they're like, really? You want me to do it? And, you know, it makes their day, makes their week, you know, that they got to be a part of something that, you know, that you're creating. So to me, that's one of the benefits. That's one of the good things about independent filmmaking.
And I'm sure, Mike, you there?
Oh, I sure am.
I'm sure you'll be able to tell your kids, Dad was in, or your grandkids, your grandpa was in a movie many years ago. Want to see? So it's that, I'm sure you got that same type of kick, and I'm sure there'll be a part later on, a few weeks, that I'm sure was one of the, Dave, was one of the perks that you get a signed DVD or something like that?
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was kind of odd for you guys to, like, wait a minute, I'm actually signing this for a fan.
Yeah. I actually had it, or someone actually approached me already, asked me for an autograph. I was like, hey, I heard you're going to be in a new Camp Slasher. I was like, yeah. I'm like, well, can I get your autograph? I'm like, you know I'm nobody, right? They didn't care. They wanted it.
And I bet you were thinking, I thought I'll never see the day when I'm doing this.
Oh, my wife even saw the big glee and grin on my face. She's like, oh boy, it's going to take a month for this guy's ego to come down now.
I know I have a few copies of the movie that I'm part of that are still floating around, that they know that I'm in it, and I'm sure I'll be approached at some point saying, yeah, you're going to have to sign this now. So there's that aspect. I'm sure. Will you guys be doing the circuit at any point?
Yeah, Dave? No, we're actually going to be at Pop Rock and Horror New Year's Eve in Pennsylvania. Going the 30th of this month.
And I know I was about to say horrifying, but Monster Mania, it will be, I'm sure, coming up. They do that twice a year. That might be beneficial for you guys too.
Yeah, we've got a couple lined up. We haven't done anything for Monster Mania yet, but we're currently trying to figure out what conventions that we want to, you know, try to be at. So it's a very good possibility that we could end up at that.
Dave, besides finishing up Bloody Camp next year in regards to filming and putting everything together, are there anything else that might be in the works that you are willing to tell everybody?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun.
We have an idea that's been floating around, a script that started to be written about a different film We're kind of hopeful that if we can wrap up Bloody Summer Camp in time, we could get a crowdfunder going by the summer and possibly start filming in the fall. It's a different kind of take. It's a more modern style horror film, but yeah. So we're already thinking about the next project.
So, can you, in your experience, I'm sure we probably just covered this, but can you tell me the experience, the process you take in putting together a film, and I'll leave it at that.
I write all my films, so yeah, as at least up to this point. And usually it comes up with I come up with an idea for a script, and I'll come up with several different ideas, and I'll bounce them around. First off, I'll tell a couple people that I'm close to, get their opinions on it. And yeah, I'll go through the thought process in my head. Of course, with an indie film, it has to be something that we could actually film with a low budget. So everything from costumes to locations has to be considered. And so I'll bounce around three or four different script ideas before I kind of fall on one that I really start pursuing. And then I'll start Amber and my cinematographer, Owen. They're usually the two that I kind of stick with the entire way until the script is done. And then once the script is done, then I start talking to some of the returning cast members that I use a lot. I have a couple people that I like to use in every film just because they're reliable. I believe they're good. And I think they're entertaining. And so, you know, we'll get together and then they'll help me make a pitch trailer. And then we'll start building the crowdfunder. And if we're, you know, it depends on whether or not we need to do an all or nothing crowdfunder or a flexible one. But,
I'll put this in now here before we get into a little bit of fun stuff. But this is for kind of maybe geared to you, Dave, and Amber. Mike, if you want to chime in, you could do so. But what advice do you have to give to others out there, both young and old, that might want to get into making movies themselves?
A couple things that I can give advice to that I probably should have taken myself. One, make a lot of connections first. When I first did Curse, I had like 200 people on Facebook. I didn't know anyone who had anything to do with any kind of local cinema. And so that's why I couldn't find anyone interested. Part two was a complete night and day because I had gained interest in other people and I had found connections. But connections goes a long way to finding people willing to help you make your film, because you can't do it by yourself. And secondly, what I should have done, what everyone tells you to do and I ignored, is maybe start with a short film. That way you see everything you're going to have to deal with before taking on the entire thing. I did it, but the short film might have prepared me a little bit more for the whole experience. Amber?
Take risks, and if your first film doesn't turn out the way that you had imagined or hoped for, don't feel down about it. Just continue on, because it's all a learning process, and eventually you'll get to where you want to be.
Best piece of advice I can give, just from my own personal retrospect, never, ever turn away a horror movie, ever. If you ever have a chance to be in one, take it. Even to this day and age, almost every of your favorite actors all probably started in somewhere in horror. Jennifer Aniston, Leprechaun, Johnny Depp, Nightmare on Elm Street, Kevin Bacon, Friday the 13th, George Clooney, Return of the Killer Tomatoes. I mean, not even the original, the sequel. I mean, you just never know. The only thing I do know is that horror is fun. The people you meet are great, and you just never know. You could be in that movie that becomes that next cult classic, and everyone will know who you are. And it's just one of those fun ones that it's a fun risk to take, and the gain, it could be big. The loss is very little to nothing to worry about.
I'm going to add this to folks out there that might be listening. I'm going to add this to Mike's statement. Do it. Take that risk that you're comfortable with. I'm saying that for everybody, because there could be a few people. I'm not saying Dave or anything like that is part of it, but there are a few people out there that try to put people in very uncomfortable positions. So please, if you're not comfortable with doing something, you have that ability to say no and walk away. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I completely agree. Nudity is a big thing. If you're not comfortable with it, don't do it. If you have any doubts, don't do it, because if there's any chance you're going to regret it, it's not worth doing. And that's why I've always, tried to make sure that anyone who's willing to do nudity makes sure that they understand what they're getting into, because you can't take it back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I keep hearing from a lot of folks. We've had a lot of female actors that have stated in their interviews, yeah, if you don't want to do it, stand up for your values and don't do it unless you're comfortable doing it. And if they insist, you have that right to walk away.
I would never force someone to do it for the sole fact that I wouldn't want them fighting me not putting the movie out,
Right.
or trying to get it taken back. I want someone who's always going to support the film.
I'm not saying you do that.
I completely understand.
So, to kind of break away into something a little bit more fun, what kind of movies do you guys tend to enjoy? Or I'm sure horror movies have some place in that fandom, but is there anything other than horror movies that you tend to enjoy or like in any way?
I'm big into comedy as well. That's why I kind of like my favorite genre is a mixture, the 80s campy movies. I get a huge kick out of those movies because I like horror and I like laughing. So, and they're my two, comedy and horror are my two favorite genres. So movies that mix them together tend to be my favorite style.
I tend to mix up with a little bit of everything. I love my cartoons. I'm mad running on my Disney Plus right now, watching my DuckTales and my Avengers cartoons. I love comic book movies. I love mafia movies. Just watched The Irishman on Netflix. Excellent movie. Highly recommend that one. I love comedies. Just like the next person. I mean, who doesn't like to laugh? I mean, yeah. Everyone likes to laugh. I like sci-fi and adventures as well. The fantasies like Lord of the Rings, the Harry Potters. Pretty much, I'm open to all cinema. Pretty much.
I love horror. Mostly that's all I watch. But then, I do watch old movies too. I like old movies.
Is it the Amber? Is it the 80s cheese that you enjoy, or anything more modern?
I'm not much of a modern person. I like the older horror movies.
Some of the 80s cheese, like I wouldn't say Hellraiser is 80s cheese, but there's a lot of great 80s cheese horror that is out there, as well as 80s cheese, sci-fi, and everything else.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like Evil Dead is one of my favorite movies.
Right.
And then you've got Slumber Party Massacre and, old, weird horror movies. I like all that stuff. And just old school movies in general, too, mm-hmm. Breakfast at Tiffany's, things like that.
Yeah, I was, again, having a same gentleman I was having a conversation at my 9-to-5. It was the other day, and we were just talking about movies in regards to, 80s cheese, especially some of the horror movies, like maybe Food of the Gods or Alligator that came out. It's like, why did they make Food of the Gods? Because, what's it about? Well, animals eat, this strange ooze comes out of the ground, they eat it, and it turns rabbits into cannibalistic giants. Why? Because. And why are we watching it? Because.
Yeah, I think in the 80s, they were really just, there was no wrong answer for a movie. It was, yeah. It was like, oh, I got a new idea. It's like, okay, well, let's go for it.
Let's do it. And it was just plain fun. That's why we got Chud. We got Chud too, yeah. Bud the Chud.
The stuff.
The yeah. stuff. Why the stuff?
Spiders.
No one really knows. It's there. I was trying to. The gentleman I was talking to at work, he's like maybe in his 20s. And I'm like, I'm trying to tell him about Q the Winged Beast. And he's like, what's that a movie about? A winged dinosaur that runs havoc in New York. And it stars David Carradine. Watch it. Why? Cuz. Yeah, are there bad
thing about a movie is that it doesn't really have to have plausibility. It's just something fun to watch.
Yeah. It's there. I think a lot of us grew up watching it, and it happened. I think a lot of us, for someone like myself who I've told people I'm not a 70s child, I'm an 80s child, born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s. And the 80s was almost the golden age for that horror stuff. And it hit me right at that ripe spot of puberty, if you catch my drift. So nowadays, it's just all about the jump scare. And it's not about... When I look at the horror... Some of the horror movies today are good. But a lot of the stuff that reminds me of almost that nostalgia is what guys and gals like yourselves are putting out on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis, is that it almost reminds a lot of the folks that this is what made horror horror, and this is what a lot of folks enjoyed. Do you guys and gals feel that way as well?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And you gotta really, that's one big reason that you gotta love crowdfunders, because so many of these movies wouldn't exist without it. And now it's like, if you're unsatisfied with the stuff that these big studios are putting out, well, you can explore the lower, low budget indie films. You can explore what someone in Utah is making, you know, off a crowdfunder. You know, maybe his idea, you know, isn't on a big screen, but you know, you might actually enjoy it more.
Right.
You have more selection now because of that.
I think you guys might... I'm lumping you, Dave, into... And your crew into a wider... or putting you on a very large envelope that it... In a way, even though crowdfunding is helping you, and maybe Amazon Prime is helping getting someone like yourself out there to more people, but I think there is still that hustle to be made to get your work out there to even more of an audience, because even though we have the internet, it's still probably a tough time for someone like yourself to get the word about your movies out to a wider audience.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think as far as with me, as far as indie filmmaking, I think promoting is definitely still the biggest hurdle. Shit, even big time studios are still...
Dave, you
use social media.
You might have to backtrack for a moment. I think Skype just decided to relay about 2 seconds of your answer. So,
yeah, I was just saying that even big studios are still trying to figure out how exactly to market, you know, their films to people. So obviously, you know, little indie filmmakers like us, you know, that's the biggest hurdle, is trying to figure out how do you reach these people? How do you get more people to know about your film? Because making it is great, but if no one knows about it to watch it, then, you know, you're screwed.
And with social media like Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube kind of moving the goalposts, I'm sure it's making things a lot harder for you to do that as well. I know it's hard on our end.
Yeah, yeah. As more people get on, as they get bigger, it's just like Amazon. They're all doing it. They're all kind of... It used to be a platform that was great for people starting out. now it's overrun by people who are already out there, and the little guy is starting to be ignored again.
Yeah, that is sad, and you see that. At least I see it with YouTube. You're probably seeing it with Amazon. It started out, as you said, all for the little guy. Everybody started looking at the little guy, and all of a sudden, when YouTube got big, they decided, heck with the little guy, I'm not knocking the people. We want the Will Smiths. We want the Danny Trejos. We want the Samuel Jacksons. We want, the big name people on our site. Heck with the, the independent creators. We want the CNNs, the Foxes, the ABCs part of our site, not the little guy. And they're kind of trying to push the little guy out of the way. Yeah. It's very sad.
Yeah, and like I said, that's why promoting is always going to be a pain, because you're always trying to find that one way to get your stuff out there.
And if I may ask, what has your I know, Dave, you have your wife working with you, but how has the kind of the extended family and friends look at you as a filmmaker? In a way, again, you don't have to answer if you don't want to.
Oh yeah, no, I don't have any problem with it. My family, I mean, they're pretty, I guess the word would be impressed. They're proud of the movies that I put out. They're amazed that I went from being someone who was into music to just, one day I said I'm making a film, and I don't think even any of them believed that I was going to make it. So now that I am putting movies out, I think they're proud of it. My friends still kind of, nothing's really changed on that end. I've made new friends through filmmaking, but all my old friends, I'm in a band, and they kind of make jokes about it, but it's still kind of like I'm no different than I was before I was making films.
You're still Dave the whomever, according to your friends, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Dave's big filmmaker now, ain't he? I mean that in jest, but,
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. It's just like, I mean, they're impressed. They're, but at the same time, it hasn't changed how they've looked at me.
So, being that filmmaker, has your viewpoint on films changed in regards to now that you make movies?
Yeah, it's, first off, I'm way more appreciative of a lot of films because I know what went into making them, and at the same time, I'm also curious at certain things when I watch. I pay attention to things that I didn't pay attention to before. And, sometimes I get curious about how they did something, or, what they had to do to make it happen, or why they chose to do that. So it's a whole nother way of looking at filmmaking after you've been behind the camera.
That's always good to know. I'm trying to think a little bit, what else can we include in this to help? I know one thing, I'm sure I'll include the links. Is there any particular links that you wish to tell folks about in regards to finding you or anything? I state this: if you don't want private stuff out there, please do not rely any private information.
Yeah. Well, one thing we just got done is we have we just got slasher15.com going, which is the filmmaking name behind the movies that I make. So if you go to slasher15.com, you'll see the date for our crowdfunder, and once that gets going, there'll be a link for the crowdfunder, as well as there's trailers for my previous films, and there'll be updates about appearances, what conventions we're going to be at. And so that's definitely one to check out, one to keep updated on, because we're going to be updating it pretty regularly. And then we're on all social media. We're on Facebook at Bloody Summer Camp. We're on Twitter at Bloody Camp. Instagram, I'm sorry, we're on Facebook at Bloody Camp. Twitter on Bloody Camp. And Instagram is Bloody Summer Camp.
And I'll include the links in our show description down below. So, folks, if you're going to our website, you'll be able to click those links and go directly there as well. I think that's about it. Is there anything else you guys would like to include or talk about? I'm completely open about it.
No, just, like I said, just, if you're interested in the crowdfunder, like I said, it comes out on the 21st of January, and, both of our Slash Nurse films are on Amazon. It's just, like I said, one of them you have to pay $2 for, but check them out if you're interested.
So I'll see if I could get at least the Amazon link to one of them, and I'll put that in the show notes too, just in case our listeners would like to check out the movies, so or at least stream them online. If you have Amazon Prime or Amazon and you wish to check them out, please do check them out. I think that is it for this episode, and I'm going to welcome back everyone. Again, I hope you enjoyed that interview. Yes, there are a few times that I sounded kind of weird and awkward in regards to it. It's just that I'm a big fan of horror movies and independent horror movies, so therefore, there's times that I look at it and it's like, when I compare it, yeah, I'm going to notice things and point them out. So, and as I said, I'm not afraid of reviewing, watching a movie of somebody's and reviewing it right in front of them, in essence, and telling them what I think. I'm not afraid of that. I'm going to step up and tell people what I think about their product as much as what I love, what I hate, and everything else. So if you want to join the conversation, you're more than happy to do so. Once again, our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. You can leave it if you're, in essence, quote-unquote, listening to this on YouTube. Just leave a comment. If you want, leave a comment down below, and we'll see it. We'll respond to it. Or we'll read that comment on a up-and-coming episode of the Long Coat Mafia podcast. So, but we'll get to our YouTube channel in a moment. But if you could also, you may also, sorry, I want to get all this out and get this, oh, I want to say this episode done with, but I know it's coming out in a bad way, but if you want to, you could also, if you're on our Facebook page is, for those of you who are not sure and can't really click the links in the description, our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. Just do a search if you're on your mobile device, do a search for The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. Our page is the first one that comes up. Yes, we do have a Facebook group that only has 2 members part of it right now, so if you want to join that, you're more than welcome to do so and start up that community and talk to us and so forth and so on. But you're more than welcome to join our page with the other folks. We are currently at 199 people who clicked that like button. Who's going to be that 200th person to click that like button? Even though we have over 200 people following us on Facebook, we have only about 199 people who have clicked that like button. So please click that like button. That way you could see up our kind of running commentary, which we should start getting back into as the new year rolls into things, because a lot of times me and a lot of the folks that are quote unquote folks behind the scenes tend to post to our Facebook page are kind of busy with the holiday season, so that kind of fell by the wayside a little bit. I do apologize, or I should say we do apologize, especially with our Twitter and everything else. We're trying to kind of gear back up as things kind of relax behind the scenes. That way we could focus more on the show and kind of get rejuvenated, which we already are. So, what else? We do have a Twitter account. Like we said, our Twitter is Long Coat Mafia. So while you're there, please click that follow button. I should say, while you're on our Facebook page, if you're there, please, again, click that like button. I know Facebook doesn't like when we tell you to do things or suggest to you to click that like button and follow us on Facebook. But if you want to, if you don't want to do that, Facebook is too much of a boomer thing for you, head on to Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We should start to be more active on Twitter. Or if you kind of like Facebook but don't like Facebook, there's always Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Long Coat Mafia. So while you're there, sorry, rented lips. Again, I'm starting to get a cold again. Our Instagram handle is Long Coat Mafia. While you're there, please click that follow button. We tend to post up memes every now and again concerning the show and other things. And plus, we tend to post up photos of where we've been, events that we are at or taking part of, so forth and so on. So you're more than welcome to follow us there if you so see fit. But if Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram is not your thing, we are on YouTube. That's right, we are on YouTube. So if you want to, you can either click the link in the description if you're able to do so, or just head on over to YouTube and hit that search bar and search up the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. We are the only channel that comes up. And while you're there, not only can you listen to our shows on YouTube, if and when Podbean decides to post them and YouTube decides to accept the shows. I say this because every now and again, YouTube doesn't post up, or say, somewhere along the mix, our shows do not get always posted up to YouTube. So, still, that's why we have what's coming next in the tail end. But we, while on YouTube, I must let all of you know that we don't post all our videos to YouTube because of how YouTube tends to run things. And depending on when you listen to this, YouTube may or may not be a thing because of COPPA. But that's beside the point. If you want to hear about COPPA and our thoughts on that, please, if you are a new listener, go back into our archives a little bit and hear about our thoughts on COPPA and how it might be affecting YouTube. So, still, we do tend to put some of the longer format videos and YouTube exclusives on YouTube when possible, but that's why we also ask and kind of push Facebook a little bit, because sometimes YouTube doesn't like us posting videos on their channel due to the fact that there might be music playing in the background or what have you, because YouTube likes the longer format stuff and Facebook likes the shorter format stuff. So there's sometimes we post some things on Facebook and some things on YouTube. So please, not just subscribe to us on YouTube. And if you like any of the videos there, hit that like button. If you want to comment on them, you're more than welcome to do so. But also hit that follow button on, or say that like button on Facebook. That way, if there is an exclusive video on either or, you're able to do that. At least catch that particular video. Because as we continue, sometimes we stream on YouTube, sometimes we stream on Facebook, sometimes we stream on, or if we get a little bit of the energy going, we might stream on Mixer or Twitch. Our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP. Those letters are capitalized, so don't forget to kind of book that. Kind of subscribe to us there if they allow you to do that without a fee. As well as our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/Long Coat Mafia Pod. Stay tuned to kind of our other social media, because we tend to post up if and when we're streaming to those sites. We do include a link to them. So as for finding our episodes, as we stated, you can just every now and again find a certain percentage of our shows on YouTube. But if you're more on the go person, I should say, if you prefer to listen to us on a desktop or a laptop computer and not go to YouTube, you're more than happy to get our show via Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iTunes/Apple Podcasts, depending on what OS you're using, or going to our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. It's all one word. I should say The Long Coat Mafia is all one word, and dot, then podbean.com. All our back catalogs there, links to where to find us on like iTunes and Spotify. I think Spotify link is up there. I'll have to check. While our website, you can find out about our regular hosts that have been on the show, which I got to add Don Ramirez to. But you can listen to our complete back catalog going all the way to the beginning, see how rough and tumble we were, and all the past interviews and so forth and so on. The reason why I kind of push our main website, which again is thelonecoatmafia.podbean.com, is because sometimes iTunes tends to get a little finicky and not pick up new episodes on a lot of even the mainstream podcasts. It's a way for you guys and gals who wish to listen to us to snag those episodes. You could live stream those episodes, or you could download them and listen to them at your leisure. We have a lot of panel episodes up there, and we have a lot of panels, interviews, hostfuls, et cetera, et cetera. Plus, iTunes and Stitcher and Google only go up to maybe about 90, if you want to include the past catalog, it only goes up to 90 episodes. But if you want to listen to the beginning, you have to go to all the way to the to our website. So there's that. But if you want to listen to us on the go on a mobile device, we are available on Apple Podcasts, the Stitcher app, the Spotify app, Google Play Podcasts, plus the Podbean app. So if you pull up your web browser on your mobile device and type in thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, it'll direct you to the Podbean app. So I also recommend the Podbean app just in case iTunes, Google, or Spotify tend to get a little bit finicky. That way you're able to get the episode. And plus, you're able to go all the way back to the beginning, I think. Plus, possibly leave a comment. It's free. So, what else? That seems to be about it. If you have a laptop or desktop computer and not connected in it at home, we do recommend supporting your local library and logging on to their computer lab and snagging our episodes there and bringing them home to your laptop or desktop computer and listening to them at your leisure there if need be. So, that's it. See you all next week. For a brand new episode. What's going to happen? I don't know. Maybe I'll get big. Because of how our schedule is kind of being more relaxed, and we might get Big Candy kind of in somehow, whether through Skype or it's too late to get him quote unquote in studio, but we might get him in through Skype if need be, if he is willing to kind of do gear in our review, and so forth and so on. Also, side note, we did get a brand new audio mixer in, soundboard, so to speak, depending on your level of audio techno babble, so to speak. If you want to see our tale about that or hear about our tale in regards to getting our new mixer and some of our upgrades we got this holiday season, please go to our YouTube channel. As always, all our links to our social media and where to find our stuff is in the show description. If they're not clinkable in your where you get it, you can always go to our website again, which is thelonecoatmafia.podbean.com. And again, I'll see all of you next week. I am out.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.